We got engaged.
Carrington's interest. That'll do.
Keep up to date with the latest WSL action and the biggest interviews.
Team keeping an eye on our games. It just shows how big we're growing.
Subscribe to the Koi Gig podcast stream on the OTB Sports app now.
OTB AM.
With Gillette, proud supporters of Movember. Gentlemen, let's mow.
Be brilliant. Just be brilliant. No, I think he was coming on, obviously, two shifts. Obviously, one, he had to, in possession, had to play on the left side of our attack. And out of possession, had to sort of get, you know, defensively, had to get Mark Martins, their holding midfield player. So we pressed with the front two and had him as our number 10 behind that, out of possession. But in possession, he obviously operated off the left flank, and so he had a tactical sort of, he could take some information on very quickly. Like, and I just said, as one of the advantages of being sort of under 21 manager is that you sort of learn about the character of the players. And Jason has terrific character. He was unfortunate with his injury that held him back a little bit, or considerably, for a while. But he was going to come on early in the Portugal game. We had, you know, considered bringing him on early in the second half of that game. And I know that we had other options and that, but I think he's a terrific little player, Jason. Like, he's buckets of courage, and he's just a breath of fresh air around the place as well.
Yeah, it's Jason Knight. Interesting to have a manager explain exactly what the role of the player is as well, as opposed to some of the previous managers who would have just been batting away those questions and telling us nothing. Shane Keegan, good morning to you. How are you?
That's how are you keeping?
Yeah, pretty good. This was exactly what we wanted. There's going to be, not in a straight line, but there's going to be signs of progress, and Ireland with the ball and Ireland without the ball look like they're pretty well coached at the moment. What was your takeaway from the two games, not just the Luxembourg game, because obviously we have to look at these as a piece, and it seems like there are definite patterns emerging. What were you seeing?
Yeah, look, I think we were better in the first one than we were in the second one, obviously. That said, all's well that ends well in terms of how last night was. I thought we were superbly impressive against Portugal. I really, really did. We were so brave, Ger. I mean, in terms of their positioning without the ball, to go up against a side as strong as Portugal and literally decide to go man for man in terms of our marking. Like, any time the keeper had the ball at his feet, we were gone 7v7 in the attacking half of the field, leaving the three centre halves man for man. It's high risk, but it was working really, really well. It's the lesser of two evils, I suppose. You can drop off and take the safety first approach and let them have it all day. But Stephen obviously said to the lads, no, look, we're and that surprised me, because, you know, you look back at our possession stats against Azerbaijan, even when the result was good, and we kind of did let them have it. So I assumed it would be more of the same, but we were incredibly proactive without the ball and forcing them to go along. But to be fair, then, the way the bodies flooded back, when we did force Portugal to go along and it was sent into the air, the bodies had flooded back to make sure that players, so they weren't left 3v3 for too long. But the initial setup was very much kind of man for man, which, as I say, is very, very brave. And then, in terms of being in possession of the ball, the constant looking to play out from the back. Seamus Coleman in particular, with Josh Cullen out there, the amount of times those two guys found each other to get us out of trouble. And all of a sudden, because we were trying to play out from the back, that means Portugal now have to send bodies into the attacking half, something that teams probably never had to think about doing against us before. And that means, again, there's space on the counter-attack. And we just looked really, really good then when we got it out of those congested areas and broke forward.
That's the thing as well, George. It's pace. Like, we don't have top strikers at all, Shane, do we? But if you are playing a system where they are going to press you high, you have that out ball then for the pace that the lads have up front, and that's something I guess he's working on.
Yeah, definitely. And look, I think Ida was off the pace last night, but I thought he did really well when he came on. Like, if you look at the Portuguese game, we were good without the ball for pretty much the whole game, I thought. In terms of with the ball, it was really the final third of the game. For the first hour, we were only so-so. that last half an hour was when we really, really came to life against Portugal, and that kind of coincided with Ida actually coming on and that's, the slight change around.
That's an important point here, because actually what the narrative is, oh, we only got good when they went down to 10 men, but they went down to 10 men because we put them under pressure, and actually Danilo had been booked before that, so you're making the point that the change had actually occurred before that, and the red card and the yellow card actually were a result of our good play.
Definitely, definitely. And to be, again, Ger, to be honest, I had thought that he would go with Callum Robinson up top, and I started to weigh up how we'd set up, and, you know, the fact that Robinson needs to be allowed to go do his own thing. I don't think he could have been allowed to do that in the slightly more withdrawn role. So I kind of surmised that he would end up playing centre forward for those reasons, and I thought that was the right move. But when Ida came on the field, it changed things massively. There was like three balls, I think, in the first 8-9 minutes of him coming on the field where he just did what he does, which is he got his arse out, he held the centre back off with his arse, he controlled the ball in, he set it back to somebody else who was then able to release an Ogbene or whoever else, Callum Robinson or whoever it was, coming from deeper. And obviously that's not Robinson's game, so he hadn't been given us that option. So I thought he was not quite to the same extent as Knight last night, but I thought he was quite the game changer the other night, yeah.
That's really interesting, because it means from the manager's perspective that actually in game he has options now all of a sudden. Like, I always thought Ogbeni would actually be a better sub, but his two starts have been excellent, and the first 10 minutes I thought maybe it was a bit too much for him in the Portugal game, but then he really grew into the match, and all of a sudden it's like, okay, so that changes how you can play, because it means that anytime Matt Doherty wants to ping one forward, he can do that. And all of a sudden, as you talked about, the defence needs to go, oh, do we press up here, or are they going to ping long, intelligent balls over us? And that just puts doubt in teams' minds when they're playing against us.
Look, it's going to be so exciting next year, because it absolutely is going to be a case of horses for courses, without a doubt. I mean, there's people, I heard you chatting there just before I came on, and there are players who at the moment look like they've dropped out of the picture, who I bet you, I'm telling you, like, Stephen doesn't just disregard players like that. Players that are out of the picture will come back into the picture as well. And they'll regain their form with their clubs, and that'll help them push on as and challenge for spots again. So depending on who we've got and the different stages we're at next year, you're going to have those players who we've seen do so well over the last few games. Jamie McGrath didn't do as well against Portugal as he had done previously. He'll re-emerge without a doubt, so he will. And the likes of, I do think the likes of your Troy Parrotts and your Aaron Connollys will come again. If you've got all these options, that's a really, really good thing. And I think Ogbeni was selected for a very, very specific job the other night. I think if Stephen wrote down his starting 11 for the Luxembourg game before the Portugal game was played, I don't think Ogbeni was in it. I think he was just particularly selected for the game against Portugal because it really, really suited his skill set, suited the job that was needed. He was so good against Portugal that he then made himself undroppable. And I think that's how he ended up in the team for the second one, which is exactly what the young fella should be trying to do. But I just think we're going to have a lot of options depending on what Stephen requires from game to game next season.
Shane's point is a key one there, that this is Stephen Kenny, that these guys that are on the periphery of the team or the squad, Kenny will make sure that they feel loved, that he knows that they're in his thoughts over the next few months. He'll be in constant contact with them, checking how they are. That's kind of him, Shane, isn't it? Like, that he just has this man management style where it's sincere. It's also, you know, he's quite tactical at times. I think referencing Mick McCarthy after the game as one of Ireland's great players was certainly one of his more out there. He was playing tactics there, but in terms of what he does with players, I think, and we spoke about this myself and Ger this morning, it's like a lot of them are just playing for him, and players who weren't playing very well for Ireland before he came in are now playing really well.
Look, lads, if you want to draw, not blank expressions, but if you want to force somebody into a stuttering answer, when you talk to players who've played under Stephen and you say to them, what is he so good at? What is it that makes him so different and makes him so special? They're not able to answer the question. I was trying to plow, when I was at Dundalk, I was trying to plow the players. Naturally enough, you're trying to find out, you know, what did he do on the training ground, or what way did he talk to you, or what, you know, what did he do? You're just trying to figure, see can you learn a few things from the way he operated. Players are never able to fluently answer that question. They don't know themselves how he has done what he does or what it is that makes him that bit different. But they will inevitably circle back to saying, I don't know, he just has a way of making you feel great about yourself. He just has a way of making you feel 10 foot tall. And that's not to say he doesn't have lots of other attributes, but that is definitely the key one. And yeah, those energies to make people feel like that are not just focused on 1 to 11. He will absolutely be trying to have that effect on as many people around the setup as he can.
Oh, and he was talking about John Egan as a Champions League defender. You can see that's what he's doing. When he answered
totally unprompted.
Well, the question he was asked that we played the clip earlier on was him about Knight, and you know what instructions was, it was be brilliant, like, you know, be your brilliant self. Like, that's the type of thing that gives a 20-year-old going, oh, okay, Ireland manager thinks I'm brilliant. Well, maybe I am brilliant. Let's talk about Knight, because we've been fascinated / obsessed mildly with the number 10 role on this show since Finney Perth has been talking to us about it over the last 18 months or so. Is Jason Knight our number 10? Certainly that's the job out of possession, is be our number 10. But in possession too, can he be that player?
Yeah, look, he's another one who can go and challenge for it, that's for sure. I mean, it's hard to believe that a player could have just as much of a positive impact as he had last night. You really, really couldn't have asked any more from him. And it was interesting to hear Stephen describe the job, because I did think we struggled a little bit more last night in our build-up phase. I thought that front three had just changed their permutation slightly, whereas I would have up until now been calling it a 2 and a 1. I think it was a 1 and a 2 last night with Robinson as the 1 behind Agbene and Ida as the 2. Now, Callum Robinson's biggest attribute above all else is I just find his movement to be absolutely outstanding, and his ability to go wandering into certain areas to be outstanding. But when he's one of the 2, or even when he's the centre forward, his designated marker, he goes into areas that his designated marker can't follow him into, because he's going from the left-hand side of the field all the way across to the right and vice versa. Last night, as the out-and-out 10, I just thought it allowed their 6, Martins, to pretty much lock onto him and kind of man-mark him a little bit more. And I thought that caused us a big, big problem. Now, based on what Stephen said there, you're to be on the left when we have it and go in and mark Martins when we don't have it. I think there actually was a slight adjustment to the shape when Knight came on as well. So, and I think that really, really helped as well, so it did, because I don't think now any particular player could go and man mark him. But by God, he flourished in it. I mean, he really, really did. Look, there's been so much talk, as you say. He's such a high-energy player. He's so, so clever. He's getting praise from, you know, so many kind of top directions. He was excellent. He really, really was excellent. But he's going to have a fight in his hands, because we've got a lot of strong players in that position. And you know what he needs now is regular game time that he can really try and go and emerge and push on. Look, I wouldn't be getting overly carried away. It was a short period of time. If you want to get carried away about anybody, Gerard, for me all day long, it's Josh Cullen. I just can't get over how good this player is becoming. I wanted to put my fist through the screen last night at halftime when Liam Brady started saying that he wasn't shown for the ball enough. I thought it was anything but the truth. Anything but the truth. He has to be a dream teammate for everybody else. If you're a wing back and you're going running down the line and all of a sudden you've got box down the tunnel, you just know when you turn back out, he's going to be there. He's going to be there every single time. He had like 61 passes from 64 attempted last night. I think it was about 20 ahead of the next best in terms of, well, a couple of the centre-backs had decent enough numbers, but he is always an option. He uses the ball so well. His movement is so, so clever. Now, part of that is the setup as well is really, really helping him. Like, if you see last night, let's say we go down to the left with James McLean and James runs down a dark alley, he'll turn back and Cullen will be there every time. But when he plays it back to Cullen, Cullen is then switching it across to the other side. But we're in the final third at this stage, and the player he's switching it across to on the other side is Seamus Coleman, who's one of our centre halves, yet he's in the final third stepping into that space that we've created down the opposite side and shown for the ball. And the exact same the other way around. Matt Doherty, you're stuck down the tunnel, just come back to me, Josh Cullen, I'll receive it and I'll switch it out the other side to John Egan, who's well positioned in the final third to take the ball forward. So the setup helps him, but I just think his intelligence is, I know we need to get away from talking about the other fella, but like, there are serious similarities between himself and Declan Rice there at the moment. There really, really is, in the manner that he's playing. And I think he's the one that we need to get so excited about at the moment.
Okay, that's great to hear. And that general sense of everybody beginning to know, not beginning, but us understanding that they understand their roles, that has come at the end of a lot of games and a lot of chopping and changing and all the COVID stuff that we all know about at the start. But it feels like we have a very settled style of play, and we have strength and depth for most of the positions. Like when you're talking there about Coleman, he was playing centre back and played centre back over this period of games. He's been absent because of injuries for various stages, and like it wouldn't be a significant downgrade if we had Daro Shea or Omobamdeli in that back three. And it kind of feels like whatever constellation there is now, maybe with the exception of Cullen, that almost everybody can be replaced by somebody of a fairly similar stature. Maybe Shane Duffy at this point is making himself irreplaceable. But apart from that, you feel like we'll be able to withstand the vagaries of a qualifying campaign because enough players have had enough time and exposure in the system.
Yeah, I'd agree with that 100%. And I would actually say even the two that you've named, I think, you know, for all the praise I've just given Josh Cullen, I think Conor Horan would absolutely relish, you know, being told, you know, Josh Cullen's picked up an injury. You've seen what he's been doing for us the last few games. You need to go and do that for us now. You need to be on the ball 60 times in the game. And I think he would absolutely embrace that as well. And Duffy, let's be honest, was absolutely nowhere near his best last night.
Yeah.
Until the point that he got the goal, I'd say he would be very, very disappointed in the game that he was having up until the point that he got the goal. So I do. It's not to say that. I would say possibly for me, it might be Matt Doherty. I think as a right back, I think Seamus Coleman is a very different kind of a right back. I think Matt Doherty is the one who I don't know if we've got a like for like in terms of skill set at the moment. But yeah, all over the field, you feel like you've got a minimum of two options for any given position. It's taken a while to get there. I do think COVID is a very, very valid excuse for why it's taken so long to get there. But what we're seeing at the moment is what a lot of us would have felt we were likely to see back when he got the job. It's taken longer to happen, but we've got there. And look, again, that's not to get over carried away, Joe. I'm not saying we're world beaters or anything, far from it, but
well, Shane,
the general
say,
vibe.
Four games, right? Four games playing against mixed opposition. Really didn't concede that many chances over the four games. I was just reflecting on this last night. If you put a team out and you're playing sort of five at the back, three at the back, whatever you want to call it, but the strength is, you know, the strength of particularly the three centre backs and generally the back six is so good. And then if you think mentally what that's like as a defender to have Gavin Bazunu behind you, who himself is still only really getting going, you're like, we've an extremely strong bedrock here to get, like, even to eke out nil all draws in games that might be tight, like the Portugal game. We have a serious foundation here now, because Bazunu could be like he's going to be the best goalkeeper we've ever had. I think you know, he could be the best player we ever had. But like the understanding there that we go out here, we're not going to give goals away at all willy nilly, must be massive for them.
Yeah. Look, he's. I mean, I don't know. Have I ever seen a better save than that one last night? That really was
in any game.
In any game, that's true.
It was unbelievable, Shane. Like,
it is right up there as one of the best. I have ever seen. I mean, if that's a high profile game or a high profile goalkeeper, that gets shown around the world, you know, time and time again. So it does. It was superb, and he can do that. He's shown consistently now that he can do that, and also, as we've seen, just so comfortable with the ball at his feet. So comfortable. And you know, again, this whole style of play essentially could fall down if you had a goalkeeper who wasn't comfortable with the ball at his feet. But thankfully, we seem to have, you know, again, I wouldn't even say Bazunu is irreplaceable. He's been fantastic. But we do seem to have a couple of keepers emerging there. I don't know if you saw Brian Maher's performance for the 21s the other night as well. Again, extremely comfortable with the ball
Sean
at his feet.
Keep two clean sheets against Galway United lately.
True, Johnny. Unfortunately for you, look, it really is, because that's Bazunu as well. As the every time he has the ball in his hands, he immediately runs out towards the edge of the 18-yard box. He's scanning as he's running out to see what options are on, and if there's any sort of a quick release option on, bang, he does it instantly. If there isn't, grand, take a deep breath and relax. So I think he's the catalyst for a lot of the positive stuff that's going on as well. But yeah, just another reason for us to be
briefly, sorry Shane, I know the Ronaldo save like went viral and all of that, but that had to be one of those moments as a sport fan in Ireland or as an Irish soccer fan where you're like, holy crap, this guy is just, he's different. He's just, you're witnessing, like, in all the goalkeepers we've seen down the years, this guy is just, he's from another planet, I think.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, when a player breaks into a first team, a goalkeeper in particular, you know, you'll get away with chancing a forward at first team football quite young a lot easier. But when a goalkeeper breaks into a first team as young as he did at Shamrock Rovers, you do start to look and go, yeah, what's going on here, kind of a thing. All right.
He could be Ireland's goalkeeper for 20 years. Mm. Like, he could be Ireland's, you know, he's that right age that actually he could literally play football for the Republic of Ireland for the next 20 years, and we'd be sitting here in 20 years time, hopefully, on whatever format people are maybe in each other's brains going, oh, that Bazuna, we predicted this.
And you know what, Gerald, he's going to have to stay on the top of his game. He is going to have to stay on the top of his game, because, you know, how amazing is it for us to have a backup goalkeeper who's at Liverpool and threatened to try and break in there? So it's amazing. But look, he's outstanding, lads. It was go gadget arm stuff, wasn't it? I still can't really wrap my head around how he pulled off that save, to be honest with you. It was just sensational.
Good stuff, Shane. Thanks a million for joining us this morning. Cheers.
Spot on, lads.
It's Shane Keegan giving us his thoughts on the Republic of Ireland scenario. I totally agree that if the group was starting now, says Jared, we'd have a right good chance. We'd all beat Luxembourg and Azerbaijan home and away, and the games between the top three would all be close. Well, we'll see. The Nations League is all of a sudden very interesting to us. We're like, and I think the stadium will be full for games, and I think there's a feel-good factor around the team.
Sponsor jar is the big one now. I mean, the FEI, like, they've got to be in a far better bargaining position. I can't get my head around how somebody isn't.
Just one point on that, right?
Yeah.
The Brady line about, if I was running a business, I'd get all the evidence available. Where's he going to go? The Dublin taxi driver told me, he made the joke about, I don't know if you saw this in the Late Late Show on Friday night, flicked over at the end of something else and was like, oh, watch this. And Brady using the wisdom of the Dublin taxi drivers to
Brady go. Was on the Late Late.
He was, yeah.
Brady's been on TV a lot lately then.
And his point was, he's not going to Man United, is he, Stephen Kenny? A bit cruel. It's like, okay, well, that's fine. If that's where we're getting our analysis from these days, that's great. But if you are running a business, you want stability and certainty. And if you're the sponsor, you want to know who the manager is going to be for the next 2 years. Mm. So you frank the contract now, and we stop talking about it and we move on. And that's exactly what a good business would do. So this is a challenge for the FAI to see if they're well run or if they're still in a state of flux. And if they're well run, they'll go, this is our guy, this is our team, that's our stadium. Those away fans, the away fans were singing that they wanted Stephen Kenny. And the away fans always know, because they're the ones who are investing the most time and energy and reading nonstop about what's happening, and they were fully behind him. So get the deal done. Philip Nolan says, delighted for Kenny. First half save from Bazunu was unreal. Right, I want to play you this, okay? This is the Luxembourg manager, Luke Holtz, and his translator. He wasn't happy with the conduct of the Irish management team last night. Wouldn't exactly say why. Have a look.
Coaches wants to say to Zep that he's very disappointed about the behaviour of the staff of Ireland. This evening they came and made the played the big guys because they were winning. In Ireland, where we were winning, they immediately disappeared in the dressing rooms, and we didn't run to them and made them ridiculous. But they tried to do that this evening after the match. That's not very fair play and very disappointing. So we are not used to that of British teams. Normally they should not be like that.
Do you realise that Ireland is not a British team? And secondly, what in particular happened tonight?
Some of teams from the Ireland.
Different place. But secondly, do you realise what specifically happened tonight?
No, we should ask. No.
It's like saying Luxembourg.
No, everything is said about that.
So what can we clarify? What happened?
No, they behaved very unsportive after the match. And
did they not shake your hand, or was there what specific act was unsportsmanlike?
How to say it in? They did not behave as a sportsman. Okay.
Can you be specific?
No, that's enough to the question. Next question, please.
Sounds like an excuse.
Not an excuse. It's a fact that... It's a constatation. Yeah.
Sorry, did Kenny shake your hand after the match?
Sie gibt es nicht. Das ist ein Englisch.
Ja, ein Englisch.
So nicht mit dem Thema. Schon das gesagt,
dass
das
geht nicht.
Aber das ist
doch
mehr.
Look at
you probably.
You have another question?
No, I just said you brought it. You brought it up.
Yeah.
We're following up on.
Wow.
That was hilarious.
That was class.
The poor old interpreter was like, am I answering the questions here? Because they just kept lashing it back at him like, what are you saying? Oh my God.
The interpreter seemed to have like, oh, I mean...
He did wear probably the finest...
The coat.
...the coat I've ever seen anywhere. It was just...
Sheepskin.
I was almost... Weird. I was willing them, like, if they were playing anyone else, to have a good performance on the night.
I wish he'd rocked up to the post-match press conference. And is with us, I think. And good morning.
Yeah.
Well, you were there for that. What was that like?
I was. It was actually... It was pretty hilarious. It was a weird press conference. It was very tense from the very get-go. Luke Holtz came out. He was not a happy man at the end of the game. First off, the first question, he blamed the referee, said that the referee would not allow them to win the game because, firstly, Shane Duffy was offside for his goal. He feels that Luxembourg should have had a penalty somewhere. Not sure where he got that.
That was the handball in the first half.
Yeah, it must have been that. And then he was disappointed with the goal that was disallowed as well. He said that should not have been disallowed. Secondly, in the press conference, he then went on to throw more shade at Ireland, saying that there's not much justice in the world of football, but there is some justice in Portugal finishing second in the group after playing a B team against Ireland on Thursday night. And then that happened. I guess the funniest part of that was probably the back and forth with the Irish journalists, who almost seemed to be defending the pride of the Irish nation in the fact that Luke Holtz did not know that Ireland was not part of Britain. I think his British football comments actually came from a place where he actually genuinely thought that Ireland was still part of Britain.
Ah, no.
To which one of the Irish journalists said, it's like saying that Luxembourg is part of Belgium.
That so, sounded like Gavin Comiskey.
Yes, I believe it was Gavin Comiskey.
I don't think he... I think, was it not the translator? It was like, same part of the world, kind of, those islands. Was he not trying to do he must have had one of those... British school atlases that had British Isles over this whole kind of part.
Yeah, I presume it was something like that, yeah.
All joking aside, though, we are, you know, this is the thing, and we are trying, this is the time where we're moving away from being the you know, basically another leg of the British football system where all our players went over there. This is now changing, and, you know, we're sending players to the continent, and maybe we're finally playing like a team that's developing its own identity here.
Yeah, well, I mean... The whole thing about British football is almost an outdated concept in general, Johnny, because, I mean, what is British football since the 1990s? It's not lumping up to the tall forward to knock it down. England have not played that style of football for at least a decade, if not more.
They always had the plan B Scotland. Crouchy, though. That was there was always a bang it forward, and the centre-backs would always, when they were chasing the World Cup round of last 16 or trying to get out of a group desperately and flailing about, they would always lump it up to the last 5 minutes. But I think you're right. English football is now actually a bunch of small, diminutive forwards who find pockets of space and kill you.
Yeah, and if you look at the England team, I mean, it's got some of the best number 10s and attacking midfielders in the world. They've got, you know, Jack Grealish, Mason Mount, Phil Foden. All these players are really talented footballing players. And granted, Gareth Southgate isn't the greatest tactician in the world or play Pep Guardiola style football, but I mean, they've got a really good team coming along there. But I guess if you're talking about the Irish side, last night they didn't really play all that well, and for a large part of the game you're almost thinking to yourself, well, maybe Luke Holtz was right here, because they were going long a bit more. But Stephen Kenny clarified after the game that it was a tactic to try get in behind them, because last time when Luxembourg beat Ireland, they were too obsessed with trying to play out from back. They got caught in the ball too many times. The Luxembourg press is quite good. I was like, in the game last night in the first half, first 10-15 minutes, Ireland could barely get out of their final third, because Luxembourg, they were just pressing high. They were really good at it as well. So they had to go long to Ogbeni. They had to go long to Adamina. And it didn't really stick. It wasn't until Ireland moved away from that in the second half and started to get on the ball more, started to compress and then fire out to the wings, that they started to really get some good advantage and good possession and start creating chances against that Luxembourg side.
He might have been on the button when he said, like, in the game in Dublin, you know, and I don't know if many of us remember exactly what went on after the game there, but maybe he felt that their shock 1-0 win, which was really the low point for Irish football for some time, or certainly of this campaign, maybe he felt that Kenny and the lads didn't kind of embrace him enough, or didn't, you know, they weren't nice enough after the game. But it's interesting to think back to that, Inda, because I was reading recently that Stephen Kenny, apparently after the press conference was over that night, was kind of just almost looking into the distance in the whilst all the journalists had gone. And it was like, that was my one moment in this campaign where I remember as they were going off the pitch, I was really worried as to what Stephen Kenny would be like in the dressing room afterwards, because I didn't know what he could say to make that any better.
Mm. Yeah, well, interestingly enough, just to bring it back to the Luke Holtz stuff, a Luxembourg journalist explained to the Irish press that essentially what Luke Holtz was trying to say was, in Ireland, when Luxembourg won, they won graciously. They shook everyone's hand. He basically said Ireland just retreated to the dressing room straight after the game, whereas down in Luxembourg, when Ireland won, Ireland were out in the pitch celebrating and Stephen Kenny was giving it the big one. That was essentially his the crux of his point. But the British comments did get under Stephen Kenny's skin. But he even said in the press conference afterwards that he spoke to the players about it. And you just played the clip earlier on where he lists off an incredible list of names, it has to be said, of Irish players that were downgraded by the Luke Holtz comments.
Where did he get Mick McCarthy from?
Very specifically, I would say very specifically picked, Johnny. You know, there's
Robbie Keane being mentioned. You can say that Robbie Keane is like that. Robbie Keane is 100% tactical, but at the same time, he was one of our better players. Liam Brady, absolutely. Mick McCarthy.
Honestly, if Martin O'Neill wasn't in there at one point in time, even though he didn't play for Ireland, I wouldn't have been surprised. It was Paul McGrath, it was Liam Brady, it was Mick McCarthy, it was Robbie Keane, and there was others along the way.
You didn't mention Richard Dunn. Richard Dunn would have been the full house.
Yes.
Exactly. Richard Dunn would have been the absolute, the cherry on top of that list of Irish players. But Stephen Kenny was clearly annoyed by that comment. He was clearly frustrated by it. He mentioned it to the players in the dressing room. And
we played that clip earlier on where he was throwing shade on the sports psychology of the Luxembourg manager.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And whether or not that played into the Irish players or not, I don't know. Ogbeni and Josh Cullen were basically saying that, you know, they didn't need that to get motivated for this game, that they have their own internal motivations for it.
Yeah. I'd say that the players are less interested in that in some ways than, like, it's definitely Kenny's thing from the start. And it goes to the Andy Farrell quote earlier on about, like, we are skillful. Yeah. We can believe in ourselves. Like, we are skillful. And I that's why I think this job is important. That's why I think Kenny is actually going to be a very important figure in the history of Irish football. If it failed, it's going to be very difficult for somebody else in that system to come and get that gig again. That's my point on that.
Yeah, well, here's the thing, Ger. You OTBM have Kelly Harrington on later on the show. She is one of two Irish female boxers in Katie Taylor, who will go down as two of the best female boxers of all time. Jason Quigley is fighting for a world title later on this month. Two Irish players and an Irish captain in the European team of the Ryder Cup this year. Irish rugby have just beaten the All Blacks. We have talent within this country. And why can we say that all these sports that we've thrived in across the world, we can't do that with the most participated sport in the country? We can do it because we do have the talent. And I think more than just, you know, I don't want to overblow what the performance was last night. It wasn't a good performance for 60 minutes of the game, but moreover, it's about the pride within the jersey that Stephen Kenny is bringing back, because Trapattoni did something to the psyche of this nation when it came to the football. And it was him that started that seed that Irish players cannot and should not try to play football.
Liam Brady was in the dressing room for a long period of time.
Yeah.
He bore witness to it. And then when he stopped being in the dressing room, he went on the telly and defended Trapattoni and defended the tactics and defended how we were playing after really, really bad performances. Brady would be like, nothing to do with the manager, like just a, you know. So it's interesting to see how this, how the turntables have turned.
The public moved away from that as well. I don't think you can get away with that anymore. You can't on the one level watch Ireland beat New Zealand and play unbelievable rugby and then expect to have the same grow for the Irish team if they're like trying to get a nil-all draw by putting their backs to the wall in international football. But I tell you what, I mean, the boy Holtz has fairly gotten the Irish journalists going into it. That was so passionate.
Yeah,
and it's like, we're better than this. It's almost like all the Irish journalists at the press conference got together and were like, this is, you know, we're representing our country here. We're gonna call you Mr. Interpreter.
Well, you see, just one last point on the pride side of things. There's a good documentary that's just dropped on Copa 90. They do documentaries. And they spent the summer with the Scottish fans for the Euros last year or 2 years ago. It was last year, 2021, sorry. And essentially, look, Scotland are on a different journey because Steve Clarke is a pragmatist who doesn't play nice football, but he's getting results. But what he did as well was restore pride in the Scottish jersey. What he did was bring fans back who had stopped watching Scotland altogether because they suddenly had a team that were getting results, that were winning, and that they could be proud about again. And I think there's a lot of parallels with this Irish side that I know people who don't watch Ireland anymore because it was just so dreadful to watch over the last 10 years. And they're starting to watch it again. Friends of mine who don't watch the League of Ireland, didn't really know who Stephen Kenny is, didn't know what he was going to do, have always repeatedly been texting throughout this campaign into the group chats, Ireland are playing really well here. Even if the result didn't follow, they're saying Ireland are playing really well here in a shocked way. So if that continues over the next couple of months, that's all I want. Ireland aren't going to win the World Cup. They're not going to win the Euros.
Hang on now.
They can go out and be a good
competitive side.
You're teaching us how to dream here. What was the gossip about the contract? Soon or is Liam Brady, is somebody tipping Brady off that actually it might be 6 months before we get that deal done?
No, one of the funniest parts of the contract conversation was when Josh Cullen was in front of the media and he was asked about the contract situation. He said, well, I haven't been asked specifically myself by someone in the FAI whether I want Stephen Kenny to stay on, but he does want Stephen Kenny to stay on. The whole squad wants Stephen Kenny to stay on. The word seems to be that it's going to be the end of the month, regardless of the end of the campaign. It's probably going to be that November meeting, which is coming in, I think it's the 23rd of November. This month is when the decision is going to be made, but all the signs seem to be that it's going to be a Stephen Kenny new deal to take us into the Euro campaign.
All right, good stuff, Enda. Thanks very much. Safe home. Cheers.
Cheers, lads.
It's Enda on his way back from Luxembourg.
OTB AM
with Gillette, proud supporters of Movember. Gentlemen, let's move.